from WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
Tom Ryan is a flavor chemist, but not just any old flavor chemist. He's the guy who invented the McDonald's McGriddle and Pizza Hut stuffed crust pizza.
Years and years of looking at research in the pizza category, two things were always true. If you want to make a pizza more valuable to me, put more cheese on it. And then the other thing was, most people didn't eat their what we called pizza bones. The crust after you ate all the good stuff usually went in the trash or to your dog. You know, I did the first prototype in the lab, and it looked like a Schwinn bike tire. It was huge, and it was ugly as hell, right? but when we put that or a couple of versions of that later in front of consumers, and I read them the concept and said, this is a stuffed crust pizza. What does that mean? I've got a ring of real mozzarella cheese tucked inside the crust. So when you're done eating your slice, you've got this cheese-filled, gooey breadstick thing. And people were like, I got to see this. We opened up a pizza box and showed them. And the guy looked right in the glass, because I was behind the glass. He looked right in the glass and he said, my dog is going to hate you.
Today on The Sporkful, I'll ask Tom Ryan how he eats stuffed crust pizza. And I'll run a few of my own techniques by him. I'll also find out whether he has any regrets about these foods he's created. I mean, they're iconic, but they're also pretty unhealthy. And we'll talk about the science of burger smashing at his restaurant chain, Smash Burger. I'll give you a hint. It involves something called the Maillard reaction. Stay tuned. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely. And because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. Quick reminder before we get started, friends, that if you're on the go, one of the bestest, most awesomest ways to listen to The Sporkful is through the WNYC app. Even if you're going to get on a plane or a train, it can download the podcast right to your phone. Boom, you can listen to it underground or in the clouds. Get the app at wnyc.org/mobile. Let's jump into today's topic for mastication and rumination, which is inside the mind of a culinary mad scientist. My guest today is the founder and chief concept officer of Smash Burger. Before that, he was an executive at several different fast food chains. Gourmet Magazine has named him one of the top 25 food entrepreneurs of the last quarter century. Tom Ryan, welcome to The Sporkful.
Hey, Dan. It's great to have me here. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Now, you got your undergrad degree in food science.
I did.
Right? You got a master's in lipid toxicology.
How about that?
Okay.
Yes, I did.
And a PhD in flavor and fragrance chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like you always knew this is what you wanted to do from a very young age. Like, did you run a really awesome lemonade stand? I mean, what were some of your earliest inventions?
Nope. Always had a penchant for being creative. I didn't really always do that with food. You know, the food thing came, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I started college. I was studying pre-med or in that category, and I was studying biology and genetics and all the things you had to do as a prerequisite. And I just kind of said, you know, being a doctor doesn't even appeal to me. It's a one-man show. I really want to work collectively with more people. I wanted to work with a team, and I wanted to be innovative and creative instead of formulaic. I picked up a course catalog one day, went through it. There were all these credits that counted in this thing called food science. I took one class and absolutely fell in love with the discipline. It was just a brilliant idea for me to realize that there was a whole set of microbiologists, chemists, physicists behind the things, a bottle of ketchup or a pint of ice cream that you take for granted every day. So it just became this really enamoring thing for me to get into that.
So we're going to get more into Pizza Hut and McDonald's and some of your classic food innovations in a little bit, but I want to first talk about Smash Burger. So let's get into the burgers.
Sure.
And the cooking technique.
Yeah.
Itself. Let's talk burgers. A lot of burger books and
yeah,
burger, quote-unquote, experts.
Sure.
Out there, one of the first things they'll say is, don't press down on the burger.
Yeah.
Don't press it down, Tom.
Yeah.
You press it down, the juice is going to come out. You name your chain after that very technique of smashing the burger.
You bet.
Please explain to me, how can smashing burgers make them more delicious?
No worries. So this is very straightforward. So really, the lore of burgers, particularly burgers that are either on a flat grill or on a charcoal grill at home, it is true that in the cooking process, if they're cooking and you've got all that great fat, you know, basically melting and basting all the lean meat, and that's where all the flavor comes from. To squeeze or put a press on that beef is going to squeeze all that out. So it is true, you should never press a burger in the process of it cooking. But at Smashburger, it's different. First of all, we take that certified Angus beef and we ball it into loosely packed meatballs. And the key to a great textured burger...
I'm interrupting you, Tom, to point out to our listeners, loosely packed.
Loosely packed.
That is a crucial point for all burger chefs.
It is. Kind of making these loosely packed meatballs, staying and not doing much more to it, and then smashing it on the grill at the very beginning for the first 10 seconds is what we do. It never gets smashed again.
Interesting. So once. First 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the Maillard reaction?
Of course. I'm a flavor chemist.
I figured you would be, but I just wanted to be sure.
So let's
explain
whack
to people.
It's really simple. So that whole searing, so the Maillard reaction is generally the reaction of taking proteins and sugars and caramelizing them in the presence of heat to develop all these great roasted, kind of fried and savory flavors. And so what we do is we paint the grill with a little bit of butter because it's a great heat transfer media, and it also gives us these dairy notes that actually aid in the caramelization. We smash the burger with a smashing tool on our hot grill for the first 10 seconds. The bottom of that, the pressure that's created on the bottom of that, does three critical things. One, it caramelizes like crazy. And so we get this meat candy layer, if you will, on the bottom of this highly reacted, highly caramelized flavor that if you peeled it off and ate it, it would be like intensely beef flavored beyond belief.
Why don't you just sell that?
Yeah, we could. It's like the pudding top, right? But actually, in the context of everything else, you need the rest of the burger there to have the rest of the flavor experience. But anyway, that caramelized layer sets up the burger you can taste in every bite and actually becomes the inherent seasoning. Second, the smashing technique from a loosely packed meatball sets up this really fabulous tenderness in our burger. It's so loosely packed that when you smash it, it's that seared bottom that holds it all together. So when you bite it, think about this. When you bite it, it gives up everything all at once. It releases, if you will. It's like biting into a water balloon of beef flavor.
Wow. Have you trademarked that phrase?
Not yet, but I should probably. But anyway, and what happens is, and that gives you that intensity. And when you've got all this, and so that's another cool thing. And lastly, and probably most importantly, that caramelized layer is actually physically a shell. It's so hard and caramelized that nothing can get through it. And so if you think about it on a hot grill, when you're setting it up at the very beginning, when it cooks, all those hot juices got to go someplace. Because it's loosely textured, they cook up through the burger. There's actually these little cavities. You can see the juices bubble up through the burger. And when we season that top, those juices actually dissolve the seasoning, draw back down into the burger, and the burger actually bastes itself in its own juice.
Oh,
and then
my
when you turn it over, that shell that was keeping everything going up now becomes like a cap or a roof. So when those juices hit that, all it does is recirculate. So even with a burger patty that's 20% fat by weight, which it is, we keep all that fat in the burger, which is all that flavor in the burger. So we actually don't have a lot of cookout.
I want to give a shout out to the great Kenji Lopez Alt of Serious Eats. There's a thing called the Food Lab on Serious Eats. He's the guy that I read up, and I will link at sporkful.com to his in-depth research on the science of burger smashing. Mm-hmm. He's the one that taught me about the Maillard reaction.
Okay. Yeah.
He actually says, it's a slight variation of what you said, that it's also called the Browning reaction, that it's a series of chemical reactions that take place when protein-rich foods are heated, that it's not to be confused with caramelization. So I'll let you fight that out with him.
Sure.
But he explains that it doesn't just make meat taste good, it actually makes it taste more meaty. And he did a whole bunch of different tests, and this backs up your approach. He says that you must smash the burger within the first 30 seconds before the fat has turned to liquid, mm-hmm. and that you will not lose fat that way. So you mm-hmm. said first 10 seconds. You even have 20 seconds to spare.
Yeah, but you know, you only need 10. And, and like I said, the less you're in it, the better you are. So you know, the less you work ground beef, the better texture it's going to be. It's going to stay looser. And just on that caramelization in the culinary world refers to anything that browns. In the technical world, caramelization is only sugars in
okay.
high heat. But in the culinary world, it includes anything that turns brown. So I'm aware and I'm cool. He's got the right definition technically. I'm using the culinary version.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I want to run an innovation by you.
Sure.
As a food innovator yourself. I have proposed that it might be better to eat a cheeseburger with the cheese on the bottom, because that brings the cheese closer to your tongue and accentuates cheesy goodness. do you put thought into the layering of the different, because you have smash burgers mm-hmm. that have different types of cheese, some have bacon, some have mushrooms or veggies, and the layering of the burgers affects which ingredients are going to hit your tongue first.
It does.
What do you think about my cheese on the bottom theory in particular? And then talk to me in general about the thought you put into the layering of these different components.
So, you know, what you're bordering on is something that we think about all the time, which is something we call flavor display, which is in any complex recipe, how do you want the flavors that you actually taste to sequence? And do you want them to be melded, or do you want them to come through as individual vector flavors, if you will?
That's so interesting. Do you have charts and research on this?
No, but you can. But you could. I mean, I've seen sensory displays where, you know, if you give people, I'm making it up, a chocolate chip cookie, and you got a baked note and a vanilla note and a cocoa note and a little orange note from whatever character bean they're using, you can actually have people dial in Frank Lutz style, you know, when they're experiencing that. When you overlay those, it kind of gives you these sensory displays. So in the world of sensory science, they actually do map things like that. But to your idea, and I want to make sure I understand it, if you were to simply take the burger with cheese on top and turn it upside down and put it on the bottom of the bun, which is called the heel,
okay.
put it against the heel.
Learned a word there.
It may change the sensory perception a little bit, but in most cases, cheese is not, it's kind of a, it is a richness factor, and it's not a definitive character flavor. It more is like a background versus things that display really quickly because they're instant on, like ketchup or mustard or a dill pickle or a fresh bite of onion. Those things are all the things that kind of get real spiky, and when you hit that, you hit it. So we think about it. It may not, you know, it may be better for you if you're really into feeling the cheese, or it might be more of a mouth feel than a flavor.
Right.
But the way you do order things does make a profound difference.
I take your point that in the burger experience that the cheese, the flavor of the cheese is often lost. It's more about richness and mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. But that to me is an argument for putting the cheese on the bottom to get some of that flavor. You wouldn't want sometimes when I talk about this, people say, well, put it on the top and the bottom, but that's going to be too much cheese.
We do that.
Okay, right. So that's why I'd be curious. Like, for instance, you brought these delicious burgers here today, which I've been sampling. I took some of my bites with the burger upside down to put the cheese and the mushrooms and everything directly on my tongue. Now, that can also be a tough situation because then you get the thicker domed half of the bun on your tongue as well, and that's more of a barrier.
That's a crown, by the way.
Crown, sorry.
Exactly.
The crown and
heel
the heel?
And crown.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yeah, because it's confusing for me when I talk about the top half and the bottom half of the bun. Because
well, now
I'm
you
often
got it.
Eating my burger upside down. People say, well, which is the top then?
Uh-huh.
So that's why I'm intrigued by the idea of putting certain things underneath the burger as opposed to everything on top.
You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of places around the country that do order their things different. I'm not sure it was thought out that way. So I think it's just a matter of personal preference, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not sure if it was a really profound cheese that might make, you know, really intensely flavored one, it might make a difference, but I'm not aware of one.
So you're not ordering up any big tests anytime soon, is that what you're telling me?
Not yet.
Coming up, my conversation with Tom Ryan continues. He'll talk about inventing stuffed crust pizza, and I'll see if he's tried my technique, the stuffed crust pizza croissant. Plus, we'll learn how they get the McDonald's logo branded on the McGriddle, and I'll ask him how he feels now about his role in creating these popular but unhealthy foods. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. My guest is Tom Ryan of Smashburger. He's a businessman and a flavor chemist. All right, Tom, let's move on to some of your most iconic contributions to the food world, namely McDonald's McGriddles and the Pizza Hut stuffed crust pizza. Let's cover pizza first. Now, how do you get the cheese inside the crust?
Well, we actually went to one of our cheese vendors and had them take blocks of mozzarella and cut them into cubes, like long rectangular ribbons, if you will.
Like bars.
And we actually oversized the crust, and actually the way they still make it today is it's an oversized raw dough, and basically it's pieces like that put around the perimeter, and the marker for how much space was actually the average thumb width. So we had a built-in tool for all of our employees.
How much space? You mean how much?
One thumb link apart end-to-end. Because you can't put a continuous string in there because it'll blow out. So you need to leave some room as the cheese melts inside of a stuffed crust pizza.
Oh,
it expands and gives off a lot of air. And if there's no void volume in there for the cheese to melt into, it blows out, which is no longer a cheese in the crust. It's cheese all over the crust.
Right.
So actually, it's
I bet you guys broke a couple ovens at the test facility that week.
A few. Yeah, it was a lot of fun doing that project. But basically, it's like think about a little Stonehenge, if you will, of cheese pieces around, and then we fold the crust over and crimp it. And then it gets handled like a normal pizza after that.
Perhaps without even realizing it, you said when you eat your pizza, you have this crust filled with cheese left. But is that really the best way to eat stuffed crust pizza? To eat it so that you have the crust left. Is that your strategy in eating it?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, pizza is one of those things. And if you're thinking about the original ads we did, which was people eating backwards. But when we watch people, we did a lot of what we call ethnocentric research, where we actually, you know, film people in restaurants and watch how they do it. They really ate it more traditionally, front first. And then some people ate the crust right then, and sometimes they piled them up and ate them at the end.
Because I think that they could even double their sales from what they are if they would put emphasis on the different ways to eat stuffed crust pizza. For instance, one technique I pioneered is to, on a regular slice, is to remove the crust and lay it down from top to bottom of the slice and fold the slice around it. You could do that. You could also, because I went out and ate a Pizza Hut stuffed crust pizza the other day in preparation for talking to you, if you just hold it on the plate with the crust end towards you and then roll it up, you make a sort of croissant. It's like a pizza croissant. And I feel like that's gangbusters right there.
You know, I think all those are really interesting ideas. I mean, for us, all we wanted to do is get it in the marketplace and let people have at it. And I think if people are innovating ways to eat it that brings the distinctiveness of that product to light, that's a great thing.
So let's talk about the McGriddle, which for people who don't know is a breakfast sandwich that involves eggs, usually sausage or bacon. And then in lieu of typical bread, there are these two small round pancakes, each about 3 inches in diameter, mm-hmm. that form the top and bottom bun. And those pancakes have a maple syrup infusion. Mm-hmm. Is that the right word, Tom?
It is. Yeah, exactly.
So there's no real syrup on the sandwich. It's kind of in the pancake, which is used as the bread for this breakfast sandwich. Start off, just walk me through, what were you going for? What was the concept? And then we'll get it to how did you pull it off?
At the time, probably the biggest promotional breakfast item anybody knew anywhere in the country was the Grand Slam breakfast at Denny's, which was, you know, eggs and meat and pancakes all in one platter. And so we had this idea of, could we put a Denny's Grand Slam breakfast in your hand, which was the McDonald's equity at breakfast. You could drive and eat at the same time. But we kind of got to the point where we wanted to figure out, how can we get a pancake sandwich that tasted like a pancake and syrup without having to have the mess while driving of using syrup. And so the innovation came by finally finding an inclusion of a maple-flavored crystal that, when baked into this little pancake that we used, melted and stayed soft and gave you the impression of a syrup-laden, or at least a syrup-doused, pancake, and that became magic.
And one of the trademarks of the McGriddle is that the McDonald's golden arches are imprinted, branded onto the outside of the pancake.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Because I might want to start branding all of my pancakes at home. Like, I don't have a family seal, but if I get a family seal, I want to put it on my pancake. So
that's
how can
great.
I do that?
So it was a really debated thing, and we wondered out loud and then with consumers, is this going to make it look too commercial or diminish the kind of integrity of how this looks as a food?
One of the concerns was, is this going to look too commercial?
Mm-hmm.
People were afraid that they wouldn't.
Too fabricated.
People wouldn't want, okay, all right.
Too fabricated, meaning too processed.
Right.
Which was,
I was
going
to say, I don't think people are going to hold that against McDonald's, are they?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a shadow there that McDonald's was pretty sensitive to and should be, because, you know, I think overly processed food is really not great. So the point was, you know, is this going to exaggerate that or not? How we do it is pretty simple. These little things are made in basically muffin tins. And so all we had to do was to emboss the logo on the bottom of the muffin tin. It gets filled up with batter, goes through an oven, comes out. It's got the indentations or the anatomy of that arches on the outside. We took it to consumers, and they actually liked it.
I do want to ask you, because when I told some people that I was going to be talking to you, one of the things that they sort of said, one of the things that a lot of people reacted to was just the idea that as we know, certainly now, some of these foods that you were certainly a great pioneer of mm-hmm. are not especially healthy. Mm-hmm. We've learned more and more now about obesity in America. People talk a lot about the role of fast mm-hmm. food in that. I'm curious to know now in retrospect, having had a role in
sure.
selling a lot more of these unhealthy foods, how sure. you feel about it.
Well, I think there's a misnomer around what's health. I mean, I don't think the opposite of healthy is unhealthy. I think it's wholesome. And I think that it's a free market. And a lot of these things were driven by consumer demand in the marketplace. And I think as long as brands offer consumers a range of choices so that they can have everything from very indulgent and rich all the way down to very simple and perhaps lower calorie, that's the game that we're in. And I think that just focusing on anything that drives sales and targeting those things because they're unhealthy out of the context of other options that the same brands provide people is a little myopic, to be honest with you. And so in my opinion, I think consumers are sophisticated. I think they're informed. I think everything should be done in moderation. But clearly, $1.5 billion as a stuffed crust pizza and being named the innovation of that decade clearly demonstrates the fact that there was an unmet consumer demand for whatever itch that scratched.
I think you're right that you can't vilify any one product or person for it. It's certainly not anyone's fault that cheese is really delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But do you regret your role in that?
Mm-mm. Not at all. I mean, look, it'd be like regretting my role as a winemaker because of alcoholism. It's like, you know, I didn't design it for people to abuse. I designed it because people really enjoy it. And if people make a conscious decision to abuse it, that's actually a personal decision, which is kind of what we stand for.
All right. Well, Tom Ryan, founder and chief concept officer of Smash Burger. Thank you so much, Tom. Really appreciate you coming in and bringing us burgers.
My pleasure. It's great to I'm really glad you invited me. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, friends, that just about does it. Please do remember to connect with me on Twitter at TheSporkful, Facebook at Facebook.com/Sporkful, or the good old-fashioned interwebs, Sporkful.com. We've sort of got an unofficial two-part series here going. You know, a lot of burger talk this week, and then in 2 weeks we're going to have hot dogs. Among other things, we'll be celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Hot Dog Summit, which sounds kind of like every weekend at my house. But it was special when it happened 75 years ago. Trust me, we'll talk about it in 2 weeks. This podcast is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Kristen Meinzer. Special thanks to Chris Bannon. I'll be back in 2 weeks. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.